Hi, this is Stephen Laddick.
And I'm Kent McPhail. Welcome to What the M,
the podcast about the mortgage default servicing industry.
What the M is a bi-weekly podcast with new episodes dropping every other Friday. All right, welcome to the show today, guys. And Steve, how are things up in the Keystone State?
Things are absolutely gorgeous. It is springtime in Philadelphia, an absolutely gorgeous day here, which means pollen and allergies are at an all-time high in Philadelphia. It's really been a fun couple days here with all the allergies.
So when you say things are getting nice up there, like what's the temperature like?
It is 64 degrees today. How about that?
Yeah, that's a cold snap for us. It was 88 yesterday in Mobile. So anyway, the theme of today's show, we want to discuss diversity, equity, and inclusion as it relates to the default servicing industry and, you know, putting it all on the table. You know, Steve and I are both middle to older age white guys, and so it's not lost on us the irony in that. But Steve and I both feel like this is an important topic, and we have a fabulous guest today to talk with on the subject. So, you know, for what it's worth, we're going to do our best. Our guest today graduated from Roberts Wesleyan College with a BS in organizational management. She received her master's in education from the University of Phoenix. She's been in the default servicing industry for the last 16 years with Mr. Cooper, formerly known as NationStar. She currently is the Vice President of Corporate Social Responsibility for Mr. Cooper. Please welcome to the show, Taniqua Green.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you for being here.
Thank you for being a guest on our show on such an important topic. I've had the pleasure of knowing you for a number of years now, long enough that I don't remember how long. It's also, I've had the pleasure of watching you grow in this industry, and I've also seen you speak on this topic of diversity at other industry events. So let's go back a little bit in time to when you were starting out. I remember seeing you speak at a industry event about a year ago, and I recall a story you told about when you were starting out and applying for jobs and the name on the resume. So as we get into these topics today to kind of set up what we're going to talk about, can you share with our listeners that story?
Yeah. So Stephen and Kent, thank you once again for having me. So yes, we do go way, way back, a longer time than we care to announce to the public. But when I started out in this industry 16 plus years ago, I struggled with getting callbacks from some organizations. And so as a way to try and get around being named Taniqua Green, my husband was like, your name sounds too black. You should use your initials on your resume and see if you get more of a callback. So he wanted me to do away with Taniqua and just have T.L. Green on my resume. And I absolutely refused to do that. I understood where he was coming from because I needed a job, right? But at the same time, I didn't want to hide who I was as an individual for the sake of a job opportunity. I felt the right organization would see my name and see the skill set I was going to bring to the table and not have a problem with Taniqua as a name on a piece of paper.
Yeah, that's a fascinating story. And so I just actually had the pleasure of meeting Ms. Green, Taniqua, at the MBA in Orlando. It was the first time I got an opportunity to speak with her, and she graciously agreed to do this show. And again, we appreciate it. So, Taniqua, in your current role as Vice President for Corporate Social Responsibility, what all does that entail? I mean, that seems like a pretty broad, like you probably have to wear a lot of hats, I would guess.
Yes. So I do currently wear three hats today. What makes the title corporate social responsibility is all of the things that makes a company socially responsible, right? So under my umbrella falls our diversity, equity, and inclusion. I have environmental social governance, or ESG, oversight as well. And then I manage our community relationships. So the relationships that we have with state agencies and nonprofit housing partners falls under my umbrella as well.
Wow, that's a lot. So do you ever get a chance to sleep and eat as well?
I'm learning that the work-life balance, it's been an interesting transition.
Well, that's good. And you just mentioned two terms, DEI and ESG. We're going to be talking a little bit about both of those today. So let's start with DEI. What do you believe the goals for diversity, equity, and inclusion should be in the mortgage industry? And what sort of changes need to happen to accomplish those goals?
So diversity in of itself is such a large word. There's so many different factors of the word diversity. It goes beyond our gender identity. It goes beyond the color of our skin. And for most organizations, that's where they stop. They figure if we have a nice, healthy man-to-woman balance, we're doing good. If we have some bi population within our organization, we're doing good. But it's bigger than that. We want to make sure that our differently abled people in the country are accounted for. We want to make sure our veterans are taken care of, our seniors are taken care of, the LGBTQ plus are accounted for within our diversity metrics as well. So there's different layers. And I think what we need to have happen is for us to acknowledge that if we take a look within our organizations, we can see what the missing pieces are. And then if you don't have an opportunity to just reach out to different organizations to broaden what your organization looks like, then you got to get out into the community and do some community work for the people you want to be a part of your establishment.
Very good. Ken?
So what do you feel like are the most challenging aspects of your job in promoting diversity in the industry? And in the time that you've been in the industry, what sort of progress have you seen and or lack of progress?
So being in the industry for 16 plus years, I have definitely seen some hopeful progress. When I first started, as you all started the call with saying, you know, you're two older white males. Two mature white males. You know, when I entered this industry, that was all I saw, whether it was within our own organization or if I was at an industry event. So I think now when I go, I'm not the only black female in the room or a person of color in the room. Or woman in the room. And as we have panel discussions, the easiest way for us to make headway in showing that we want to diversify things is diversifying the panels that we have. There has got to be more than five white men that can speak to whatever the topic is at the current time. So if we change that up, people will feel more comfortable about joining industry events, joining the conversation, because they see people that look like them. But we definitely have come a long way. I think some of the ways that we can promote it is looking internally at our marketing material. When we're trying to put out a flyer or put together an event, does the marketing material look diverse? Is it going to be inviting to somebody other than the male population? Are women accounted for? Are students accounted for? You know, are more mature than you two people accounted for? And are people of all different shapes, sizes, colors, races, are they accounted for within the marketing material? And something as simple as that can make people feel like they're included in the conversation or that they're wanted to be there. I think another challenge we have with diversity in organizations is the organization understanding what's important to them. What are your goals? Do you want to do more with the veteran population? If so, how are you communicating to them? How are you working with them? You have to build credibility amongst the groups that you're trying to bring in.
Yeah, so I think maybe we should refer to ourselves as well marinated or seasoned.
Okay.
I don't feel old, but yeah, I tell you, Taniqua, you know, when we go to these events and it's part of what really motivated us to want to do this, because you walk around and if you are at all self-aware or whatever, I mean, there's just demonstrably a lack of diversity. Yeah. And that's sort of what motivated us to want to hit on this topic.
Communication and open discussion are always important. So how do you recommend companies communicate needs for diversity, equity, and inclusion with colleagues or individuals who do not understand the importance?
So one of the biggest things for me is allowing grace, right? Grace for the conversations, grace for helping people understand what allyship looks like. Well, you might not, let's say you have an employee resource group within your organization that identifies for the Hispanic community. And as a white male, maybe you can't relate to what they're going through, but what would make you a good ally to that resource group is attending their events, listening, having conversations with them to see what their needs are. How can you use your power, your privilege, your influence to help push some of their agendas forward? So ways that you can communicate that with is having roundtable discussions. You can do email blasts. You can do webinars. Google is a powerful tool these days. And even when
I sometimes find out the answer to legal questions that way.
Exactly. A couple of weeks ago, there was a date, a diversity date that I wanted to remember, and I just couldn't remember it off the top of my head. And so when I put in Employee Resource Appreciation Day, which happens to be November 17th every year, the plethora of diversity options for communication and learning tools were endless. So it's no longer an excuse of I don't know what to do or I don't know where to go. If you don't know a reputable company to start with, Google will lead you there for sure.
You used the term allyship, and I wanted to follow up on that. Explain what you mean by that, because it's a very important term.
So allyship, in my opinion, right, allyship is just someone who can help you, almost like an accomplice, right? They are down for the cause. They are your ride or die. They are helping you be your champion for a cause or cheerleading you on or using their influence, using their power to help you accomplish whatever it is. I guess an example, let's say there's a social justice cause, right? And I may not have a legal background to help me think through whatever it is I want to work through. Well, you too. I can reach out to either one of you and discuss it, and you can help me get on the path I need to get on. You can make references. You can say, hey, let me do this or let me make this call. That's what an ally is. They're saying that what's important to you is also important to me, and let's work together to get something accomplished.
Yeah, I love that. You know, in my professional life, there's not a week that goes by that I'm not reaching out to somebody on some issue. And I mean, you know, we all got to help each other get along. Mm-hmm. And I love the context of that as you're explaining it as it relates to diversity. So in your role, what sort of like as law firms, we're always wanting to create a more balanced diversity in our workplaces. What sort of questions do you typically get from law firms, or what are roadblocks that they say exist? And what sort of advice do you give them to navigate that?
So I've had a couple of law firms that will say, Tanika, we've tried to increase our Black employees, or we've tried to increase our Hispanic population, and they're just not responding to us. We even made an offer to them and they walked away. They just don't have interest in us. What can we do differently? And the first thing I asked was, what does your website look like? When you talk to them on LinkedIn or you talk to them at a career fair and they go back and they're doing their research, they're going to interview you just like you plan to interview them. What do your board members look like? Is there anybody in your leadership team that looks like what you're trying to attract? If not, they're not going to feel that there's a place for growth within your organization for them. And so because of that, they're going to go to the next website. And if there's something familiar there, then they're going to say, oh, okay, let me give option B a try. And you may be the better fit, right? You may be doing all the right things and have all the best interests for the candidates that you want to bring into your establishment. But if they don't feel like there's a path forward for them, they're not going to waste their time. So it needs to be visible. It needs to be evident. They need to see you more than just at the campus career fair or career day. Are you involved in mentoring circles within the school of business or the school of law that you're trying to attract the talent? Do they know you more than one day a year?
Excellent points. Let's shift gears a little mm-hmm. bit. A lot of people have heard the term lately known as ESG, and you mentioned that earlier. Mm-hmm. And in fact, ESG has even come up on a federal level recently with a veto by President Biden. So can you explain to the audience what exactly the term ESG means and why you view it as important?
So ESG means environmental, social, and governance, My favorite part of the three-letter acronym is the S, but I'll get to that in a moment. So from an environment standpoint, what are you doing for climate control, right? What are we doing to help us be able to make sure 6-7 generations down the line, there's still going to be a planet for them to live on? The S, social, what are we doing socially? What are we doing for the community? What are we doing for our employees? Our philanthropic work falls into the S. S is really a feel-good portion of this acronym, which is why I love it. It gives you an opportunity to serve people, and I love doing that. And then G is governance, our compliance, the bah humbug of the letters, making sure that we are, you know, following regulations, and when ranking entities view your report and your website, that you're doing all the right things. And bah humbug was definitely not the right term. It's making sure that you have policies in place. One of my favorite policies we have is we're against human trafficking, and we don't want any vendors or, you know, work with any company who would support such a horrific thought process, right? So the governance is going to be your policies, your procedures, your proxy statements. All of that falls within there.
Taniqua, so what sort of recommendations would you give to law firms like my own or Stevens, where they can get more educated on the topics?
So for ESG, my team relies heavily on SEC.gov, right? That provides a lot of information. You can sign up for their newsletter to know when things are handed down so that we can make immediate change if necessary. And I did mention Google earlier, but some of the things I would tell you to Google in your search is ERG best practices. And so we haven't really touched on ERG, employee resource groups, but every organization should have those. They're employee ran, they're volunteer based. And then the groups can bring to you all, hey, what's important to me right now? Where our AIM population is focused on Ramadan. And what does that look like? What does Ramadan really mean? Our ERGs are very resourceful, and they teach us all a lot. Every event we have, everybody walks away with an aha moment or learning something that was really impactful.
Very good. We're going to shift gears one more time, because if you listen to the show, you always know we have the sports question. Mm-hmm. I know that you've resided in the Dallas area for a long time now, but I also know you grew up in New York, and I also understand you're quite a Knicks fan. So second, how did you become a Knicks fan, and how did growing up in New York influence your career?
So definitely a New York Knicks fan. I didn't have a choice. That was the home team, right? Even though I was 5 hours away from them. But my dad loves sports. My brother loves sports. So between the New York Knicks, New York Yankees, and the Buffalo Bills, just in my blood, it's in my DNA. I was actually born in Buffalo. So the Bills Mafia is like in my birthright. But growing up in New York, what helped me with my career is that my family was like real workaholics, right? They got the job done. I never seen them complain about the work they did. Most of my family worked at GM in the factory, and I started my career, I guess you could say, in a factory working on the assembly line. And that actually helped me get the job here at NationStar at the time. When I interviewed, the gentleman who interviewed me asked what I did before I came there. And I said, I worked on the assembly line. He said, you'd be perfect for our call center, because that means you are competitive. You're going to try and get all the calls in, and you're going to do all the right things from, you know, making sure compliance wise, because you have to work safe and hard in a factory. So he felt like I can duplicate that here. Didn't make sense to me at the time. I'm like, assembly line phone calls, so different, right? But it definitely played a major role in me winning multiple competitions within Mr. Cooper or NationStar from a productivity standpoint. It gave me the foundation that hard work really pays off. So
How did you end up in Dallas, though, ultimately from Buffalo?
So I knew that working in the factory, while it was in my bloodline, I was going to break that generational opportunity, I guess you can say. And my husband worked for Coca-Cola at the time, and we were just over the snow, over the weather, and we came to Dallas one year for Christmas, and it was 95 degrees on Christmas Day. We had just built our first home. And when we got back home after the new year, we put a for sale sign in the yard. My neighbors were like, what happened on vacation? The sun happened. That's what happened. And so my husband was able to transfer with Coca-Cola. I took the buyout from GM and we haven't looked back.
Let me ask you one other question before we conclude. Mm-hmm. And that you have a master's in education.
I do.
There's not a whole lot of people in the mortgage servicing industry with a master's in education. What made you pursue that, and how has that benefited you in this role? It has to help.
Yes, it does. I thought I wanted to be a teacher. That way I can enjoy summers off. My husband and I, we have three boys. But as I continue working my career at Nations Farm, Mr. Cooper, I was pursuing my master's degree. And so then once I started getting promoted with the Nation Star, that teaching degree was like, oh, the teacher salary just didn't seem to be in comparison to where I was. So, but I definitely have been able to leverage everything I learned obtaining my master's degree from instructional design for curriculum, for training courses, speaking opportunity, things of that nature. So while I wish I wouldn't have got my master's in education, but it definitely has benefited me throughout my career and played a vital role in where I am today.
I'm sure that served you well, you know, in your position you are now. So you mentioned the Bills Mafia, and I was wondering if we search Taniqua Green on YouTube, are there any videos of you jumping off trucks, crushing tables, or anything like that we need to know about?
I need to fit. No.
I love it. So my absolute favorite question to ask in our podcast, because the answers are always amazing. If you had an opportunity to go back and sit down with the 20-year-old version of yourself, what sort of advice would you give that young lady?
I love this question because it really made me think. And I know I will start off with saying, give yourself some credit. You know, you take care of everybody else. At some point, you're going to have to remember to take care of yourself. Don't play down your strengths for the sake of someone else's comfort. I've done that so much in my career. I've always been the voice for others, but never been the voice for myself. So I'm starting to walk in that and own that for myself. And I love it. And lastly, I will say you will experience career disappointments along the way, but trust me, where you land will be exactly where you're supposed to be. And you'll love it there.
That's fabulous advice. In my life, there have been several doors that have closed that I thought were the exact doors that would have made everything. And they made all the difference in the world in a positive way that they were closed.
Yep.
One door closes, another door opens.
Absolutely.
I just got to tell you, I so appreciate you being on the show. You're a fabulous guest. You have certainly brought a whole lot of interesting information. And I was making notes as you were talking about things. I want to go back to my management team and say, hey, we should be looking at this
Absolutely.
Or that. Thank you.
Can't thank you enough. Truly appreciate it. Look forward to seeing you next trip down
Absolutely.
There.
Absolutely. I'll be here. Thank you all.
Thank you so much.
If you like what you hear on our podcast and want to hear some more, please rate, review, and subscribe to What the M on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. If you want to visit with us on social media, we can be found at What the M Podcast on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Thank you.